Welcome back, True Believers. This is DJ Powers on radio.dominican.edu, and you're listening to Between the Panels every Thursday from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock. And wow, we have a crazy week to talk about. I was normally going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy because that was what I was really excited to talk about. I was going to have a little bit of an indulgence week, but two major things have gone down that I think really highlight. One highlights a lot of the problems with the comic book community, and one is simply just a loss for the comic book community. But before I get into that, I'll start off lighthearted as always. We're going to do the weekly stack, and then we're going to spend most of the show talking about these two major events and what they mean going forward for this community and this medium. So, starting off, our weekly stack, we actually have a big one this week because it's been, release-wise, a really great week for comic books, and that's good considering this, you know, whole week has been kind of crazy. But Batman Beyond number one is going to be my first recommendation for you guys, written by Dan Jurgens with art by Cliff Chang. And so after I recommended, you might remember about a month ago, I recommended Batman Beyond Rebirth number one, and that was the one shot by DC Comics to usher in the new Batman Beyond series for the Rebirth era. And I recommended that because, you know, it's very nostalgic for a lot of people my age. A lot of people may remember the Batman Beyond cartoon. I remember I watched that a ton as a kid. I had a lot of them on DVD. My friends had a lot of them on DVD. I have plenty of the action figures. Batman Beyond was just crazy. So the series itself officially starts in Batman Beyond number one this week. And it is the beginning of a new Batman saga for Terry McGinnis. He has returned to Neo Gotham in the future of the DC Universe, and he is ready to be the Batman again. And he has to deal with threats such as gang uprisings, along with the possible return. In my notes, I have exclamation point and question mark in parentheses, because we don't know. You know, I won't spoil a lot of the details, but the Joker might be back. Certain Joker gangs around Neo Gotham have been working hard, and they've been looking to redeem themselves in a way, and one of them has revealed that they have the Joker's body frozen in a cryo tube. He's being preserved for a future resurrection. But the gang member in possession of this body may just be crazy. The Joker body we see may be a fake and or totally dead and not able to come back. But all we know is Terry McGinnis is back. He's going to be Batman. Going to go get up some crazy Neo-Gotham type action. And the Joker may or may not be making his grand return, or there might just be a crazy Joker gang member out there thinking that he's got what it takes to be the new Joker. So absolutely read Batman Beyond number one. If you want some nostalgia, Cliff Chang's art is outstanding. I love the cartoony, stylized feel of it, but it also is very powerful art. It's crazy. I love just the energy that comes from it. And Dan Jurgens is an old school writer, so absolutely Batman Beyond number one. Pick that up for sure. Next, we have a recommendation from Image Comics, Chew number 59, Chew as in chewing food, C-H-E-W, by John Layman with art by Rob Gilroy. Chew, as a concept, is John Layman's brainchild. It's his favorite series he's ever written, and it's on its penultimate issue this week, that being the second-to-last issue to come out for Chew ever. And what's amazing about the series is ever since it started way back in, I want to say, 2005 or 2006, Chew was a series about a psychic detective named Tony Chu, C-H-U, Tony Chu, who has a special ability to, whenever he eats food, he gets psychic readings from the food that he eats, and then he uses those psychic, so like, he can, like, let's say he ate an apple, he would know who planted the apple, he would know on what day the apple was picked, he would know the whole journey the apple took to get from where it was picked to where it sits now in Tony's hand and as he's chewing it. So it's kind of a crazy power. It's a goofy concept, but he plays it up for both laughs and some serious stuff. And Tony would use those powers to do good and solve cases as a detective. And this whole series has been following him unraveling this entire crazy conspiracy, this world-ending plot. And, you know, it's obviously a goofy concept and the different kinds of powers that people have. Like, I know there's one where there's a guy who gets intelligent by eating, but he has to consistently eat or else he loses his intelligence. So he ends up eating to the point where he is the size of, like, 20 people, but he's speaking, like, equations about the secret of life and stuff like that. So it's kind of a goofy concept. Rob Gilroy has illustrated every single issue, which is really hard to find nowadays in comics. And they've been working on something for years, unraveling this big, crazy Tony Chu conspiracy theory. And right as we're getting to the end point, Chu number 59 is our second to last issue. Next month, this November, is going to be the final issue of Chu. And it's been a long ride. You know, I pick up the trades a lot. One of my best friends, actually, Chu, is his favorite series he's ever read. And it's going to be sad for him when this series goes. But in short, Chu is a psychedelic, crazy detective procedural. While goofy on the surface, is home to really dark and tragic storytelling about our main character and the horrible, awful things he endures that happened to him as he simply tries to do the right thing and save the world. If you want good comic books, you should absolutely read Chu, creator-owned series by John Layman and Ron Gilroy from Image Comics. Comes out every month. Final issue coming out next month. Pick up the trades, pick up the singles, whatever you got to do, read Chu. Oh, that was a good rhyme. I'm pretty good at this. Next issue we got recommended for you guys is Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme number 1. So I'm actually really excited about this book because Marvel's got a lot of crazy concepts they can pull out of nowhere that sometimes need to get dusted off and they may not give enough love to. And the magic corner of the Marvel Universe and the supernatural side is one of those corners that hasn't really been getting the love that it needed lately. And the same kind of success story with the cosmic side of the Marvel Universe, where Guardians of the Galaxy was an amazing hit, and now it dusted off all of these Z-list characters and made them Marvel household names. I'm hoping that the Doctor Strange movie can ignite that same sort of interest within fans and make the magic corner of the Marvel Universe a really viable and really fun part of Marvel that we can keep coming back to. So, Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme number 1 follows a team book written by Robbie Thompson, who's one of the former writers of Supernatural on television, so he's really good at this kind of stuff. He's good at the multi-character arcs. He's good at having this, especially with Doctor Strange compared to Supernatural, he's really good with having this psychedelic, crazy magic stuff. So, Robbie Thompson is a perfect fit for this book, with art by the outstanding Javier Rodriguez. Javier Rodriguez is some of the most amazing experimental and sequential art you can ever see. His line work is so clean. His colors are amazing. So this book is a treat. We're getting spoiled with this book. And so the concept, finally going to get into the concept of what the book is. So Doctor Strange has to unite. He's the Sorcerer Supreme of today. But what if there was a threat that threatened all of reality and all of time and space, and Doctor Strange had to unite different Sorcerer Supremes from all across time and space? So we've got like a young version of Doctor Strange's old master. We have Merlin from King Arthur's court. We have Nikola Tesla, I believe, is a Sorcerer Supreme in the world of Marvel. That's new for this book, but it's kind of fun to think about that one of the greatest scientific inventors united both science and magic to be a freaking Sorcerer Supreme. We have new characters, like there's one who is a ancient Native American ghost rider, so she rides I believe it's either a bear or a horse, and she's a master of magic, but also a ghost rider, so that's really cool. We have a future version of Wiccan, who is one of Marvel's very young teenage magic characters. And so I'm excited for this book because it's going to get all of these crazy Steve Ditko, Stan Lee type magic concepts and turn them into a modern era. And instead of having just Doctor Strange, we have about 6 or 7 different Sorcerer Supremes doing crazy stuff, mind-bending, crazy psychedelic journey. So if you want something that's just going to blow your mind, something to just look at for Javier Rodriguez's art, then go on your smartphones, go to your store, whatever you got to do, find Doctor Strange and the Sorcerer Supreme number 1. A part of Marvel Comics' newest Marvel Now relaunch, and pick that up. And okay, we still got tons of books. That was only 3 of 7 I got for you guys. So I'm going to go through the next through pretty swiftly here. So Prowler number 1, again by Robbie Thompson. Robbie Thompson's got some big ones coming out of Marvel's stable today. Prowler number one with art by Jamal Campbell is a part of the Clone Conspiracy story. It's launching as a part of the Clone Conspiracy story, so from Spider-Man. So once Clone Conspiracy ends, we're going to get a Prowler ongoing series. And this follows one of Spider-Man's main supporting characters, Prowler, who is a superhero employed by Spider-Man to double as Spider-Man when Peter Parker is off on business stuff. So at that point, no one will believe that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. So it's a fun concept, but this book follows after some of the events of the Clone Conspiracy, where the Prowler, I won't spoil it, but he's been roped in by the Jackal. He's working for the Jackal and against Peter as a double agent. And he has to rely on the Jackal to stay alive. We don't know why. And he's doing deeds for the Jackal in San Francisco and helping the Jackal's new company stay afloat. So it's going to be interesting to see Prowler, who is a character throughout his history has toed the line between good and evil, now fall back into his old habits and possibly become a super villain again as opposed to a superhero. So if you want to see a Breaking Bad style Marvel comic story set in the streets of San Francisco in the world of Spider-Man, no less, then pick up Prowler number one. Next up, I'll just give you the last Marvel Comics book I have recommended before I go to the last two non-Marvel books I've recommended. So Vision number 12. Oh boy, Tom King. Tom King is back again on my recommended list. He can't seem to escape my recommendations. Tom King is back with Gabriel Hernandez-Walda writing the finale of Vision. So Tom King recently was acquired by DC Comics. Tom King is an exclusive DC Comics writer, but in the midst of that deal, he had already been writing Vision for Marvel Comics and doing an award-winning and critically acclaimed run, and he was allowed to finish that story very graciously, and the fans are excited because this has been a tragic and dark and emotional roller coaster of a series. And I'm not even going to give any plot details because I don't want to spoil anything, because it's not what you would expect out of Vision, out of a Vision series. You know, when this was announced, people expected, oh, okay, what villain of the week is Vision going to fight now? What adventures is Vision going to do? But it's been not that at all, and it really has been one of the most special books to ever come out of Marvel Comics, almost ever. So pick up Vision number 12. From Marvel Comics by Tom King if you want to see the finale of one of the greatest modern comic book series to ever grace the page. For those of you just tuning in, this is DJ Powers with Between the Panels on RadioDominican.edu, where we talk everything comics all the time. I am in the midst of my weekly stack, where I recommend the best books of the week that are worth your dollar, and then we're going to move on to our biggest news from around the industry, and we got some big stuff this week. But before I get there, last two recommendations of the week, we have Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 7 by Robert Venditti with art by Rafa Sandoval. Green Lantern has been needing some love ever since his awful Ryan Reynolds movie. And just without saying too much, without rambling on like I normally do, Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 7 is a continuation of a kick-ass Green Lantern story that's been going on in this book. So if you want to see what Robert Venditti is capable of as one of the longest Green Lantern writers now, I believe, to ever have the Green Lantern title, then pick up Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps number 7 to see the confrontation between Hal Jordan and Sinestro, longtime rivals and friends. And my final recommendation is Renato Jones number 5 with art, writing, ink, colors, lettering, everything by Kerr Andrews. Kerr Kyle Andrews is a big creator-owned writer with Image, and Renato Jones is like John Layman's Chu. Renato Jones is Kerr Andrews' big, crazy, this is my brainchild, this is what I'm going to give to the world. And it's been a wild, bizarre ride. It's been about a man named Renato Jones who exists within the 1% of society only to tear them down and restore order in the world and the way the world works. So it's kind of like a crazy neo-noir, bloody Robin Hood. And Kerr Andrews really knocks it out of the park. He's making a lot of statements with this book. There is a thinly veiled Donald Trump character in one of the issues, and lots of crazy stuff like that. So if you want to get a sick Image book owned by a creator who's at the top of his game, but also get something a little political, then Renato Jones is absolutely worth your dollar. So, okay, that was my weekly stack for this week. We're going to go on a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to get into our big news stories from the week, because this is actually probably the biggest week we've had since we started the show. So I'm going to put you guys on a little break, and when we get back, we'll get to the news. We'll be right back. Welcome back, True Believers. This is your trusty DJ Powers with comic news from around the week on Between the Panels, where we talk everything comics all the time. And like I was saying, we first started the show, and I said last week when we ended the show, I really wanted to use today to talk about my favorite movie of all time and have a bit of an indulgence episode where we talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. But there's been a lot going on these past couple of days, and I would be dismissive to not talk about it, and I think it's really important that we put these two things in everyone's worldview. So number one that I'm going to talk about for a little while is the passing of iconic and legendary artist Steve Dillon from all around the horn. He's worked with almost every publisher, and you know, it just really bums me out to talk about anyone passing away, obviously, but to talk about Steve Dillon passing away, it really is one of the bigger losses we could have ever been hit with. And for those of you who don't know Steve Dillon, so on AMC now, there's a TV series called Preacher, and it's been pretty popular. And it's based off of a long-running, it ended a couple years ago, a long-running Vertigo series called Preacher, written by Garth Ennis with art by Steve Dillon. And Steve Dillon's art was as much of a giant driving force for this book as Garth Ennis, who's no slouch with writing, was. So Steve Dillon helped create this concept that stuck with readers. You know, people even outside the comic industry read Preacher. You know, that's obviously why it got a TV show, because Preacher was just such a wide net. It attracted a lot of people, and a part of that was because Steve Dillon, who as an artist was just as much of a storyteller as he was an illustrator. And that's important to understand that distinction, because a lot of artists, and this isn't a knock on artists, because you know, to be a great illustrator is no easy feat. Like, I could barely draw a stick figure. You know most artists are simply illustrators. What they'll do is they'll get the new, you know, they'll get what they're meant to draw from the writer, they'll write it, they'll knock it out of the park, and we got a good-looking book, we got good-sounding writing, and we got harmonious, wonderful creation. But with Steve Dillon, he was, you know, his personality, his charismatic personality, he was nothing but the sweetest guy. He managed to find a way to always become basically the second writer for a lot of these books. So a lot of these ideas that you see from Steve Dillon, a lot of what you see from Preacher, is a brainchild of both Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon working together on this concept they both love. And he brought that energy, and he brought that positivity to almost all the comic books he worked on. He worked on Preacher for a number of years. That was about 6 years. His other majorly famous run would have to be with Garth Ennis again. All of his major runs were with Garth Ennis, actually. Him and Garth Ennis were homeboys. But his big runs were Punisher Max with Marvel Comics for a couple years with Garth Ennis, which has some of his most iconic pages outside of Preacher, that Punisher Max series. Absolutely go read Punisher just to look at it. Hellblazer with Garth Ennis, who the Hellblazer follows the John Constantine character from Vertigo Comics. And you know, his work reached out to a lot of people. Like, I'm looking at tweets from that. So the day he passed, it was the 22nd was a Saturday. He passed away on a Saturday, and you know, I woke up to that news, and it really just kind of shook me, because a lot of my favorite characters have had runs where Steve Dillon has done a couple issues and really blow me away. You know, we have artists like Mitch Gerards, who's a bit newer to the scene, but he's saying Steve Dillon was a master storyteller. Preacher, Punisher, all of it done with so much exceptional skill plus magic. We lost one of the greats. Writer Kieran Gillian says, just heard about Steve Dillon. Enormous loss. One of the most gifted comic book storytellers I have ever seen. Max Landis, another writer, says, worked with Steve Dillon on a single page of Superman American Alien. Admired him for two decades before that. A genius has left us. Rest in peace. So that's just a collection of the tweets and condolences being paid to Steve Dillon and the memory of Steve Dillon. And the news was broken, unfortunately, by his younger brother. Steve Dillon passed away in the city that he loved, New York, even though he's from the United Kingdom. And, you know, Dillon was legendary in the world of comics for his expressive style and accomplished craftsmanship. He depicted individual characters with depth and richness while making action-heavy panels seem to erupt from the page. That was a quote from NPR.org, an article written by Itelka Lahoksky. And, you know, to get a sense of how great Steve Dillon was, he passed away at the age of 54. You know, Dillon started his career at the age of 16, which I still can't wrap my head around because I've been wanting to write Marvel Comics and just comic books in general since I was like 12. So for Steve Dillon to draw from the age of 16, he's probably been drawing for years before that, and get pages published, he started off in the Marvel UK offices Hulk Weekly series, and as he gained mainstream attraction, he ended up breathing beautiful and amazing life in award-winning runs like I discussed, such as Marvel's Punisher title, DC's Hellblazer issue, and of course Preacher. The runs that featured Steve Dillon are some of the most seminal runs to ever exist for these characters, like I said, and they are known for as much for the writing as they are known for the art. In the Punisher series, it's kind of goofy when I say it aloud, but the moment I thought of when I heard the news that we had lost Steve Dillon was I thought of my favorite piece of Steve Dillon art, and it's an issue where Punisher is running away from a crime boss and all of her like lackeys, and he falls into a polar bear pit at a zoo, and he thinks, okay, great, I can use this ferocious crazy bloodthirsty polar bear to maul the people that are chasing me and it'll be good. But he falls in there and he looks up at the polar bear, and the polar bear is looking at him with this dumb like expression. And that is hilarious on its own. And if he left it at that moment, that would have been great. But Steve, I want to say Steve wanted to put this moment in, but the Punisher basically decides, okay, I need to get this bear riled up. So he winds back and he freaking clocks this polar bear right on the snout. It was just, I remember I was reading it when I first read it, and I was just like, taken aback that this crazy, violent, dark Marvel series following a guy who murders people, you know, that's the Punisher, freaking had this moment where he just decides this could work, and he just clocks a polar bear right in the nose. And it was the goofiest, most comic booky panel I've ever seen, and we have that wonderful moment thanks to Steve Dillon. So that was the first thing I thought of, and that made me really sad, because even if we were to have moments like that again in comic books, they're not going to be moments like that drawn by Steve Dillon. So, you know, like we've been saying, like a lot of the quotes you've been reading, Steve Dillon was an artist who transcended simple artistry and is as much of a storyteller as a writer is, and he was a true giant of the industry. And that is exemplified when he came back recently from Marvel Comics. He returned to the Punisher. Like, that was freaking huge. He just... taken aback by how just unbelievably unfortunate this is. He recently returned to the Punisher. Like, it was Christmas, came real early. And Steve Dillon was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to come back to the character that made me famous that wasn't Preacher. And everyone's like, oh my God, great. And Becky Cloonan was on the writing duties, and she, throughout the run of Punisher being made, she had nothing but praise for Steve and said, you know, every interaction I had with Steve Dillon in making this book was a complete treasure, and she genuinely believes, and I am almost hard pressed to agree with her, that a lot of the work that Steve Dillon put in for the, I believe it was 8 issues that he got out before he passed away, a lot of that art is some of the best art of Dillon's career ever. And that's really saying something. That's a, you know, start at 16, that's a almost 40-year career of doing art every single day. And that's really saying something. So he was last seen publicly at New York Comic Con the weekend before his death in New York City. And, you know, that bummed me out too, because I talked about New York Comic Con and there was some Steve Dillon news I was going to share. But, you know, I ran out of time. There were other things that, you know, took precedence in terms of news. And, you know, it's just unfortunate timing, and it really is one of the worst things you could ever hear about. So I just wanted to dedicate these first 15, 20 minutes or so after the weekly stack dedicated to Steve Dillon. And really just, I was originally going to do a weekly stack Steve Dillon edition, but I feel like this is a little better talking about his legacy and what he had laid before him. So the comics industry will never be the same without a giant like Steve Dillon. He can be best remembered by reading the beautiful and award-winning work he put on every single page, especially with Preacher. Like, I'm talking about the Punisher runs. I talked a little about the Hellblazer runs. But if some of my, like, if I, how do I word this? Some of the greatest art pieces I've ever seen, with just art in general, have come from Preacher. And that's obviously because of Steve Dillon. And, you know, if I had to go back and buy original art, I would buy a lot of the pages that come from Steve Dillon's run with Preacher. And, you know, definitely go pick up the trades. Go, if you can somehow find the singles, I guess go look for the singles. But you gotta pick up the big trades. Remember Steve Dillon somehow. And if you just want to look at pure beauty, then you gotta read Preacher. And then absolutely go look at the TV show. You know, that's another amazing way to remember his legacy, is to go watch the TV show and support the TV show that is based off of the work that made Steve Dillon truly famous. The Preacher TV show follows Dominic Cooper as the main character, Jesse Custer, Preacher, who has the will of God as a superpower. And so what that is whenever he says something, if he chooses to use the power, whenever he says something, people do it. And that's his will of God. And the story of Preacher follows Jesse Custer, who is obviously a preacher, but he struggles a lot with his faith. And he struggles to decide with what is his relationship with God, and, you know, what's really the right thing anymore in a world that was, at that time the book was being written, and is still morally gray. There are a lot of amazing characters in there. There's Assface. I don't mean to swear a little bit, but that is the name of the character, and that's what they wanted to name him, so I'm going to say it. So there's that guy who tried, so after the death of Kurt Cobain, he attempted to kill himself, but it went a little wrong, and the shotgun blast mangled up his face, and he speaks in mumbles because his mouth is so messed up, and his face looks like what you think it would look like given his name, Assface. And that's one of his best friends in the series. He's a kid who really looks up to Jesse and decides that Jesse's got a lot of the answers that he needs in life. And I believe his name is Shane, is another character. It is a Irish vampire who joins up with Jesse on his quest to take down God. Seriously, I can't talk about this book enough. It's got some crazy concepts. The villains are some of the weirdest parts of this entire series. There's a guy named Air Star. Air as in the German, what's the word? The German title, as in, you know, like an official. Air Star, he's a hitman looking for Jesse. There is the Pope in the time of this series, who is a fictional Pope. It's not the real Pope, but he's like one of the crazy villains of this whole series. There's a reincarnated clone of Jesus. There's a lot of crazy stuff. There's a lot of, like, controversial stuff. But also a big reason why the series really hit is because a lot of what happened in the 90s really fed into this book, especially with the character of Assface. The whole reason he looks the way he does and acts the way he does is because of the death of Kurt Cobain, the lead singer of Nirvana. And for those of you who haven't read the story of Kurt Cobain, I know it's a little off topic, but go read that. It is tragic. It is beautiful. Kurt Cobain is a legend. And a lot of the 90s zeitgeist and stuff like that piled into Preacher. And that's what made this book great. So Garth Ennis really nailed Preacher. It's his most defining work. Steve Dillon, of course, is the Preacher guy. So if you want to read good comics and see good comics, pick up Preacher by Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon. So I'm going to go on one more quick break because that was pretty long-winded talking about Preacher. And then we're going to come back and talk about the big, big news of the week. So we're going to go on one more break. Rest in peace, Steve Dillon. Your art will forever be missed. And when we get back, we'll be talking about more news from around the horn. See you guys.
You know how fast you were going?
What?
How fast you were going?
65.
The negative consequences of drinking and driving can kill the vibe to any good night, and thousands of people die every year from drunk drivers. So whatever you do, call a cab, crash on a buddy's couch, just don't hit the roads drunk. This message was brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio.
Okay, welcome back. This is DJ Powers on Between the Panels with radio.dominican.edu, where we talk everything comics all the time. And it's a serious week this week because a lot has happened recently since our last week. So Marvel Comics has recently been publishing it just ended last week. It was its final issue. Has recently been publishing a series called Mockingbird, starring the title character Bobby Morse, as she traverses through the Marvel Universe and just proves to the world that she is a badass in every way. The series written by Chelsea Kane, who has for years been an award-winning novelist, most famous for her crime novels and her mystery novels. Chelsea Kane is a big feminist. And that's good, because we do need a lot of those in the world, especially in the world of comics. So you're going to see why. And she injected a lot of those themes into Mockingbird, and the series was really good. I never suggested it on Weekly Stack because I as much as I enjoyed it, there were other books that I felt I wanted to share with you guys. But you know, it was an amazing series. A lot of the themes deal with feminism and woman empowerment and, you know, stuff that shouldn't be issues, but apparently they are. And apparently they're huge issues with the comic book community. So recently there's been a lot of controversy because, you know, the vile area of the comic book community, the kind of vile corner, revealed themselves. And so recently, with Marvel Comics Mockingbird number 8, on the cover of the issue, the character Mockingbird is seen wearing a t-shirt that says, "Ask me about my feminist agenda." And, you know, apparently some people took issue with that, and one tweet started a whole wave of tweets within a week that pushed Chelsea Kane to delete her Twitter and possibly never want to return to comics. So someone had tweeted her, it said, Thanks Chelsea Kane for ruining my favorite character with your feminist crap. So that really disgusts me. I don't know how you feel about it, but someone says that, and then it just starts this whole dialogue where trolls from around the internet and a lot of these just mean, evil people attack Chelsea Kane and throw death threats her way, rape threats her way, and they call her, you know, a feminist pig or just awful stuff like that. And Chelsea Kane goes on a rant, and, you know, by the end of it, she says, my ranting wasn't a plea for affirmation. Truly, I'm just done here. I'm amazed at the cruelty comics bring out in people. Comic readers are 99% of the best people you'd ever want to meet, Kane writes. The other 1% can be really mean. Perhaps that statistic holds up across humans in general, but in my experience, this is a different kind of mean. It's misogynistic and dismissive and obsessive, and it thrives off taking other people down. And this incident with Chelsea Kane has sparked a whole debate within the comic community, and, you know, obviously every single writer that I follow probably 100+ writers and artists from the comic world and publishers and stores and everything, you know, they all said, you know, we obviously stand with Chelsea Kane, and the fact that a lot of our fans and a lot of the people that exist within this community can be so awful to someone for simply not writing the content that they want is something truly awful. So Marvel Editor-in-Chief Axel Alonso responded to this and expressed his solidarity with Kane on Twitter, writing, "I stand with Chelsea Kane, condemn online harassment, and think the Marvel Universe and the industry benefits and grows from diverse creators and characters." So yeah, apart from working comics, Kane is a celebrated author of multiple acclaimed novels, notably the New York Times bestselling Heartsick series of thrillers, which debuted in 2004. Kane made her comic book debut in 2015's Mockingbird Shields 50th anniversary issue, which preceded her work on the Mockingbird ongoing series. Kane noted in a tweet that in her years, in her decades of writing novels, she had never blocked anyone on Twitter until she started writing a relatively low-profile comic book series, never having to in her years as a novelist selling books. Kane subsequently expressed that this type of harassment is a problem specific to the comic book industry and has never been seen by her in the world of novel writing. And, you know, that makes me a little sick, obviously, because this is the community that I love, and these are the stories that I really love. And the fact that I share an interest with people who could treat someone so poorly and then believe in such things that, you know, feminism doesn't deserve to be in comics, diversity doesn't deserve to be in comics. It really is pretty sickening. And, Chelsea recently came back online and made one last statement, and that was a statement that I read of comics readers are 90% the best people you could ever read. And so she says, "Know that I did not leave Twitter because of rape threats or because someone had posted my address or any of the truly vile tactics you have heard about. I left Twitter because of the ordinary daily abuse that I decided I didn't want to live with anymore. The base level of casual crassness and sexism." Kane noted that her departure from Twitter was a microcosm of a larger problem of comic book readers acting as bullies, frequently towards women in the industry, which I have seen plenty of times, and it boggles my mind every time that people do this. So, and they do this because they feel as though they have entitlement due to there being a platform within social media and the fact that there are people who spend money on these books. So she says, "I think the larger cultural story is very important. People are trolled, people are ruined, and trolls do get to get away with it because they can take down anyone if their ire is raised. There is still a vocal segment of the comic book readership that is dominated by sexist jerks of Twitter accounts. Twitter is still a highly flawed platform that nurtures a culture of bullying. As part of the ongoing dialogue surrounding the situation, superstar comic book writer Brian Michael Bendis, who is a personal friend of Chelsea Kane, received criticism for saying on Twitter that it's not comics that was the problem, which was perceived as dismissive of Kane's concerns. Kane posted on Facebook that Bendis' comment was completely misunderstood. And then she says, "I want you to know that he is one of my dearest friends, a mentor, and someone who absolutely has my back," Kane wrote. "I thought his tweets were supportive and awesome. I went to bed thinking his tweets were supportive and awesome. Somehow, by the time I woke up, a whole other narrative had formed. We were friends talking in the middle of the night. We were talking like friends in the sense that we know each other and we've had larger discussions that provide context for his remarks. He's right, by the way. There are misogynistic twerps in all industries." Mockingbird was the first ongoing comic series Kane had ever written, who is best known for the author of the Heartsick series. Though one of Marvel's lower-selling titles, Mockingbird illustrated Mockingbird, illustrated by artist Kate Niemiec, received critical praise throughout its run for its clever approach to format and its keen depiction of the series' lead character, long-running Marvel hero Mockingbird Bobby Morse. When Kane's Twitter exit came to life, fans and creators supported the writer with hashtag StandWithChelseaKane, which was a trending topic for much of Wednesday. The first collected edition of the series, titled I Can Explain, is currently Amazon's number one seller in both superhero graphic novels and books published by Marvel, with sales likely buoyed due to increased awareness of the series following recent events. So there's both good things and bad things about this story, and I was reading a lot of that article out of comicbookresources.com, an article by Albert Ching with comicbookresources.com, and the beauty, there's hardly any beauty with this, but the beauty of this is to see that virtually every single creator within this community rallied behind Chelsea Kane, and they stood up for her, and, you know, a lot of art, specifically artists, drew a lot of their most famous characters they've ever drawn, and wrote, ask me about my feminist agenda on their shirt or their emblem or something like that, to show that, A, feminism is, it casts a wide net, and anyone can be a feminist, anyone can believe, and everyone should believe in equality for all women and strength in all women. And it shows that, you know, in this dark time where this very small yet very loud portion of the comic book community attacked Chelsea Kane, the other 99% can rally behind Chelsea Kane and stand up to these people and say this isn't right. But what this does highlight within the industry is that the comic book world has generally been a white, male-dominated industry, both within its characters, within its creators, and within its audience. And that's been changing. You know, it's still dominated by that demographic, but over the years, I would say within the past 5-6 years, amazing strides have been taken to change that, and things have been really different. You know, we have books like Mockingbird that tout a lot of feminism and bring strong women characters to the forefront, written by strong women writers with art by a strong woman artist, with colors, I believe, even by a woman colorist. So, you know, having one book, you know, dominated by women obviously isn't going to change the whole industry, but it's an amazing step in the right direction. And the way to get this diversity out there and keep this diversity growing is, you know, you got to buy these books. When I talk about, like, America from a couple weeks ago, when I talk about Iceman, when I talk about Batwoman, when I talk about Mockingbird, when I talk about any of these books that present you something other than a straight white male as a superhero, you're interested in these, you got to buy these books. You know, your dollars are votes, and the only way, you know, it could be the right thing to have diversity, but if 10 million people buy a Batman book and then 5 people buy the Batwoman book, no one's going to publish Batwoman ever again because the sales aren't there. And that's not to say that the diversity shouldn't exist, because I think it should exist everywhere within the comic book industry. But at the end of the day, these are businesses. But these are businesses that want to present what the readers want and give you the world outside your window. So the only way to tell businesses, hey, you're doing the right thing, give me more of this, is you got to buy these books. And Mockingbird is an amazing example of that, which, you know, it's just crazy. So I'm gonna go over one more little rant from one of the smartest writers in the business, Nick Spencer. And whenever things like this happen, he's always there. He's always quick to give you the smart opinion. And he says, one more rant that might be a little less popular. Folks who want more diversity and variety have got to realize that this is still a business. Say what you will about these trolls, a lot of them are the Wednesday warriors that go in and buy books every week. A cottage industry of blogger types have sprung up who like to pretend these publishers are nonprofit community trusts, but they're not. Until there's public funding of comics, they are going to be the subject to the demands of capitalism. It's easy to put it on the publisher and demand representation, but I promise, if the books don't sell, that representation will vanish. I know for a fact that many people greenlining comics right now feel stuck between a rock and a hard place. They are being attacked for doing too much and too little at the same time. It's not a fun environment. And the reality is that these online debates or dust-ups don't move the needle either way. Only one thing does: sales. If you are someone who wants change, it is impossible to overstate how quickly you can accelerate that change by supporting books with sales. If America and Iceman and Batwoman launch huge, do you really not think it will mean more LGBT books getting on the shelf? I'm not at all saying don't speak up when you see something wrong. That's why I'm here, and that's why everyone else is standing with Chelsea Kane. I'm just saying the fastest route to change isn't Twitter, it's sales. And I wish we put a lot more energy into that side of the equation instead of the internet pile-ons. Nick Spencer hit it on the head right there, and I think that's amazing. You know, you want to sit here and you want to get on a soapbox and you want to say, this is what needs to happen, Marvel, DC, Image, all you people do it. But you also have to look at the reality of the situation and understand that there's only one way to get them to get people to understand what you want and get the right ball rolling on this. So the whole Chelsea Kane scenario, the whole Mockingbird scenario, it's tragic. And I, of course, stand with Chelsea Kane as well. And I know I, for one, will be buying the Mockingbird trades when they're all released by Marvel Comics. And you should, too, to show support and ask me about my feminist agenda. But I wanted to share this story just because it highlights the realism, the realistic, unfortunate reality that sometimes plagues the comic community, is that there are people who exist within these circles and this world that have, you know, not the most inclusive or most positive opinions. But I also want everyone to understand that it is a very small 1%, but it's unfortunately a very vocal 1%. But if people, I know all my listeners are beautiful, amazing people on the inside and out. So I know that if you get into this community and you become a voice in this community and you start voting with your dollar on what books you want, then the comics world can get quickly accelerated to becoming a much more beautiful place. So that was a heavy episode today, folks, but I'm going to sign off. This has been DJ Powers with Between the Panels on radio.dominican.edu. Everything comics all the time. I want everyone to have a good week, have a fun, safe Halloween, and hopefully next week, unless something equally crazy happens, which I hope it doesn't, we can talk about Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's been a fun day today, guys. I'll see you around. Then I can be